There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Parrot Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Generations Riviera Maya Resort and do your deal at cheapcaribbean.com.
This week's episode of Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by the North American Marlon Brando Lookalike Association. Instead, it's brought to you by our advertisers. In order to support our show, of course, we need the help of those advertisers. And in order to find those advertisers, we need to learn a little bit more about you. So please go to podsurvey.com/sideways. You can take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you a little better. And that way we can show our advertisers just how great our listeners are and what they're interested in. And even if you've taken a podcast listener survey before, this one is specific to our show, so we really do need you to take it. And also, a little bonus here, once you've completed the survey, you can enter to win a $100 Amazon gift card. So again, that's podsurvey.com/sideways, podsurvey.com/sideways. Thanks for your help.
Thinking Sideways.
I don't get it.
I brought the aliens.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
I don't know.
Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
Well, hey there, and welcome again to another episode of Thinking Sideways. I, of course, am Steve, as usual, joined by...
Devin.
And Joe. Hi.
Hey, and once again, we have another mystery for you. This week, as I always do, I'm pulling from the listener suggestions, and this was suggested by Adam and Matt originally, and I'm sure a bunch of other people, but we didn't have room for your name in the list. But the story that we're going to talk about this week, as Joe has dubbed it, is the murders of Mary Morris.
Good
That's
one.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually possible to murder somebody more than once.
Turns out.
It sort of sounds that way. So let's just hop right into our mystery.
Okay.
Our mystery begins on Thursday, October 12th in 2000. A 48-year-old woman named Mary Henderson Morris got up for a normal work day at her job at Chase Bank on the west side of Houston, Texas. Her husband, Jay, walked her out to her Chevy Lumina at 6 a.m. when she typically left, and he watched her drive out of the driveway, turn onto the road, and presumably drive off to the place where she normally stopped to get gas in the morning.
Why did he walk her to her car?
Because that's just something they did.
Okay.
It's probably, you know, walk out in the... Some folks do that. They walk their spouse out to their car and give them their coffee and a kiss and a hug, and then off they go. Mm-hmm. And that's what he did.
Unlike me, who just grumpily, like, rolls in out of my bed and into the car. And
And your boyfriend says, don't get killed.
Yeah.
You say, sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So he watches her drive away from their home in Burnett Bay, She may have been seen at a gas station shortly after she left her home, and that gas station was at the junction of Interstate 10 and Thompson Road. And there's a bunch of gas stations right in that area, but she, from there, presumably would have gone on her normal drive heading west across the city to where her job was.
She never got there?
Well, the thing is that Mary and Jay were very close, as we've realized from his walking her out every morning, and they would talk on the phone several times a day, but he made several calls to her cell phone, and she never answered. And she thought something was a little off about that, but, you know, maybe it's a big day, busy day, whatever, except that at about 2 o'clock, somebody called the house looking for Mary, and not knowing who it was, Jay just said, well, she's at work. He would later learn that that person was actually from Chase trying to find out where their employee was.
It seems like they would identify themselves, though, doesn't it? Doesn't it seem like they would say,
yeah, that's what I was
hello,
thinking too.
Husband of our employee. This is your wife's employer. We are just wondering where your wife is.
If it was a certain level of manager, I could see that. If it was a certain employee that was, say, in charge of employee scheduling and why hasn't this person showed up and I'm always calling on these Yahoos who don't show up, maybe not so much.
I just feel, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, no, I get you. I'm not in disagreement. That's okay, weird. They didn't identify themselves.
So at two,
this person calls but doesn't identify themselves. After I think it's about 4 o'clock, you know, Jay and Mary's daughter, Marilyn, they're getting worried. Where is she? She hasn't come home. Eventually, they find her cell phone in the house. So now they're thinking, oh, God, she's been in a car accident or broken down.
Was it set to vibrate, I hope?
I'm presuming.
It must have been, I hope.
Yeah, you would hope. Yeah. But at this point, they're thinking, well, something's gone wrong and she can't get a hold of us. So at about 5 o'clock, Jay calls the police, and he reports her as missing. At about that same time, the sheriff's department, they get a call about an abandoned vehicle that's been burned. That car, which is about 3 miles, or that equates to about 5 kilometers east of Mary and Jay's home.
Which is the opposite direction of where she worked?
Absolutely correct. Okay. She worked on the west side of town. Right. This car is east of where they live.
Okay.
The call comes, the cops get this call about this burned out vehicle. Well, earlier in the day, the fire department had actually got called for smoke in that same area. The call had come in at about 10:20 a.m. The fire department said it looked like it was burning leaves. It's, you know, it's October that people are burning leaves. Yeah. So they didn't bother to investigate.
But burning leaves usually smell like burning rubber.
Well, burning leaves tend to be very smoky. I am pretty sure is what that boils down to. But the long and the short of it is that the fire department doesn't go check it out. But when the cops go to check out this burned vehicle, what they find is a vehicle that has apparently been soaked in some kind of accelerant and lit on fire. And the fire has been so intense that it has melted every piece of rubber on the vehicle. Like the tires came off of the car. The heat was so intense. Inside of the vehicle.
That's been a good accelerant. I got to get some of that stuff.
It must have been. But inside of the car, they find a body. And they don't know who it is. But eventually what they're able to do, using tooth fragments that they reconstruct, they determine that indeed it is Mary's body.
Hmm.
Or so, somebody's body.
Well, no, it's Mary because it's her teeth in her skull. So they know it's her.
Well, you know, somebody could have put them there, but okay.
Oh, you two, cut it out. Right away, and you're already doing this to me. Just monkeying around on things.
Yeah, because you never do that to us.
Nope, never. Yeah. I am an upstanding mystery citizen. Mm-hmm. I don't do that kind of stuff.
She's alive on an island with Dorothy.
Nope. So anyway, she does not go to Dorothy Island. She is indeed found in the car. Like I said, they don't know, they figured out, but because of the fire, they don't know what the cause of death is. I mean, her body has been burned so severely.
Maybe smoke inhalation?
There is nothing about Mary's life, though, that is an apparent motive for why someone would want to do something like this to her. I mean, the police said the only thing they can confirm that are missing is her purse and her wedding ring.
But could they actually confirm that the purse was missing?
I thought the same thing. Mm-hmm. I have to guess that they would have found a pile of melted, whatever the material is, and the plastics that your credit cards and all of that stuff are made up in
the
your
little
ID.
Metal things that hold the handle to the purse and stuff.
Yeah, that all. Okay. There should have been a pile of that detritus, and there wasn't. Or debris, not detritus, but of debris. So that's why I thought the same thing.
And now, other question, crime scene, no gas can or anything like that was found in or near the vehicle?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
So like I said, though, is that, you know, we just discussed the purse, but also her wedding ring. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about her wedding ring more in detail later, because that is something that people point at as kind of a seedy or nefarious thing, and we'll deal with that when the time comes.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you now, though, that the next thing that I'm going to say, which happens a day or so after Mary's body is found, is always referred to as alleged. In other words, this is something that I cannot confirm, but I have to share it because it's in all of the stories. And that is that allegedly, somebody called the Houston Chronicle and they said something to the effect of they got the wrong Mary Morris.
Ostensibly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
That's the word you were looking for.
It is.
Oh, of course. That's always the word.
Now, I think it goes without saying that obviously, Jay and Marilyn, they're both devastated by Mary's death, because there's nothing that seems to have motivated this. It seems very random. She didn't live any kind of crazy life.
Oh, but she did work for a bank.
She did work for a bank, but it wasn't as if it was a really crazy crash time.
Yeah, true.
So after her funeral, Marilyn, her daughter, calls the medical examiner's office. This is on the 16th of October to see about picking up her mother's effects. At which point they told her that the effects and the body would be available at the same time, which freaked her out because they've just had the funeral and she can't understand what they're talking about. And so she goes down there.
Did she go dig up the coffin?
No, she goes down to the medical examiner's office and they show her a body, which is not her mother.
Is it Mary Morris, though?
It is indeed Mary Morris.
Huh. Mm.
It is Mary McGinnis Morris. So we have two Mary Morrises. Mary McGinnis Morris is a 39-year-old wife and mother who also lived in the greater Houston area. She didn't know Mary Henderson Morris at all. The two didn't know each other.
Maybe for the sake of easiness, it might be easier to call them Mary 1 and Mary 2.
I think I'm going to stick with Henderson and McGinnis.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's going to be better because 1 and 2 is easy for me to confuse. McGinnis lived about 10 miles away from Henderson. McGinnis originally was from West Virginia, but she had moved to the area in 1998 to take a job with Union Carbide. She was a nurse practitioner, and she had taken the position of medical director with that company, so she had moved there for that job.
Sounds like a good job.
On October 15th, which was a Sunday, McGinnis ran a number of errands. You know, it's kind of a normal Sunday. She made a couple of different stops before she stopped off at Union Carbide to give a flu shot to her friend, Lori Gemmel. And from there, she went to the Eckerd drugstore, where at about 5:30 at night, she called Lori and told her she saw someone who was giving her the creeps and said she was going to go back to the office and log out of her computer and then head home. About 12 minutes later, a call comes in to 911 from McGinnis, and she is, as reported, she's in a frantic state. We don't know what's said on the call. We don't know what's heard on that call because that call has never been released. But that's the last contact that anybody can record a contact of Mary McGinnis.
And we don't know if she logged out of her computer.
We don't.
So we don't know if she probably didn't make it to work, but maybe she
did. I would
did.
Presume her work was about a 5-plus-mile drive away from the Eckerd, if I remember right. Or so no, where she was found was at least a 5-minute or more drive from Eckerd. So for her to have been able to get back to work and then to that spot seems like a stretch to think she'd ever got back to work.
Yeah, or she got back to work, logged out, back to the parking lot, then called 911.
That
doesn't really matter. I was just wondering how close, if any, she got to work at all.
I don't think that she did. McGinnis's husband, Mike Morris, he reported her missing that evening when she didn't come home. He said that he tried to call her continually, but he never got an answer.
And it was, but it was ringing. It mm-hmm. wasn't straight to voicemail.
It was ringing. Okay. And then would eventually, you know what, actually, I don't know that it ever actually went to voicemail based on some stuff we're going to talk about in a bit.
And now when Mike called, he called 911 also to report her missing?
I believe he called the sheriff's department. Most people don't call 911 to make a missing persons report.
Yeah.
So I imagine that he actually called the sheriff's department directly.
So at that time, they were either unaware of the 911 call she had made or...
The connection. Maybe. I think they were unaware of the connection between the two.
Yeah, it sounds like.
Yeah. Mm. We don't know exactly what happened from the time that that 911 call ended and until the time of her death. What we do know is that the next day, someone spotted McGinnis's Dodge Intrepid on West Little York Street, which is near Highway 290. So it's kind of a cloverleaf and offshoot. Totally know that area. The car was found, like I said, it was less than 5 miles away from where the drugstore that she had talked to Lori was at, the Eckerd. And when officers found her body, it was in the car with the passenger's door open. It was apparent that she had been beaten, but the scene was staged to look like she had committed suicide.
Or she did commit suicide.
Maybe. Yeah. The gun that was in her hand, the gun that was used to kill her, whether she did it herself or someone else did, was the family's gun. It was registered to her husband, Mike. And forensic tests would later confirm two different things. One, that she had been gagged. And two, that she had indeed been, as I said, shot with that specific gun. So they had done ballistics to confirm that was the one that did it.
And shot where?
In the head.
Like under the throat, between the eyes, in the back of the head?
She looked like... So I don't know the exact location because that is not given away in any of the reporting. But be apparent, to stage like a suicide, it has to be either under the chin or through the side of the temple would be my guess.
Or in the mouth, maybe.
Yeah, I consider that an under the chin very similar. But yes.
Yeah.
So those are things. But it's staged to be like a suicide.
We can guess it probably wasn't in the mouth if she was gagged.
If she was gagged and then shot and the gag was removed, yes. If the gag was removed and then she was shot, no.
All right.
Yeah. So they
stupid
they were able,
ordering.
Yeah. So she wasn't gagged when they found her body, though, right? They just were able to tell from ligature marks
Correct.
That she had been gagged previously.
Correct. Okay. They could tell she had been hit a number of times. That's why it's referred to as being beaten.
Yeah.
And that she had a gag in her mouth
at some point
before her death.
And then time of death was determined to be what?
Do not know. It's. I'm guessing the window is somewhere shortly after the 911 call. I mean, for all I know, all any of us know, the 911 call recorded the shot that killed her. Don't know. But I think it's always presumed that it's right around the time frame, that 5:40 time frame. I think 5:42 is the log time of the 911 call.
One would guess that there would be mention of the shot that killed her being heard
on the 911 call. Stuff. I don't know.
So the thing with the 911 call is that the law enforcement agency, the sheriff's department, said it was so disturbing that they did not want to release it and its contents to the public.
Okay,
so,
well, maybe it is the shot. Yeah.
I can't say.
Yeah.
Huh.
To parrot almost every single place that you'll see this on, Mary Henderson Morris, like I said before, had almost nothing in her life that could have led to her demise in that way. Mary McGinnis Morris, however, did have a number of different things that could have led to the scenario where she lost her life. So let's talk about several of the things in Mary McGinnis Morris's life that seem to point suspect at who or what may have caused her death.
Okay.
The first one is a gentleman by the name of Dwayne. I'm not going to use his last name. You can find it on the internet if you really want, but he's gone through a lot about this. But sometime in the beginning of 2000, Union Carbide hired a male nurse and To what degree, I don't know, this took place, but apparently he and McGinnis did not get along, and they clashed.
Well, you know, it sounds like actually they were friendly at first, but things kind of went south, maybe?
Yeah, you know, there are things about her that seem a bit prickly in time, so I could see that how that could be.
Mm.
I don't know. That's the hard part, is that when it becomes a he said, she said scenario, you know, after events like this take place. But the long and the short of it is that they did not get along. I don't know whether it was that he questioned her in front of other staff, or if he went around her directly to upper management and questioned her ability at her job. But either way, they were not on good terms. Mm. She was not happy with him. McGinnis had told people after their spats were going on and all of the tension, she had told people that she believed that Duane was capable of hurting her.
Well, of course he was. He was a guy.
And, well, there's that. And according to her husband, Mike, it's around the time that all of the clashes were happening that she asked him for his gun as well as lessons, and then started carrying that gun in the car with her underneath the seat.
And that was according to just Mike, or according to...
So other people knew that she was carrying the gun. Okay. This is this thing that I don't get sometimes, is people are carrying a gun for their protection, and they tell everybody they've got the gun there.
Yeah, well, I would tell somebody I had a gun hidden in my car, tell them where it is and all that stuff.
Yeah, so, but yes, people knew that she was packing. She also had told people that she was going to stop carrying the gun, but... Mike says that she never had any, she never said that to him, and he, as far as he knew, she had no intention to stop carrying that. The tension between Duane and McGinnis reached a climax on the 13th of Friday in 2000 when she came into her office and she found that things were wrong. And by that, I mean, depending on the accountings, she found some of her stuff had been moved around and the pictures on her desk had been turned around. Or there's other accounts that basically imply that her desk was completely and utterly destroyed and everything was knocked around.
Cool. It's kind of psycho.
It's up to you. Well, it depends on how they're trying to portray Duane, I feel. But the thing that really gets Duane in trouble here is that written on a desk calendar on another desk, which we have to presume is his, are the words "death to her."
I got to say that it sounds like a frame-up to me.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, that's super psycho behavior.
Well, it's either super psycho on his part or her part.
Yeah, on either part.
Because, mm-hmm. I mean, frankly, if I'm planning on, like, stalking and murdering somebody, I don't write death threats on my desk calendar at work.
Anything else like that.
It sounds to me like somebody was trying to get somebody fired.
I would also mention, I don't know if this is the appropriate time to have this discussion or not, but I will just say that, she called her friend, who presumably also knew Duane.
Yep.
And she said, some guy. Right, she said, some guy is giving me the creeps, not, oh, crap, Duane is here, and he looks like a psychopath. I mean, if he were actually following her, if it was him personally, one would suspect that she would just name him outright.
Lori has said that McGinnis told her on that call from the Eckerd drugstore that she thought the man, she recognized him, and it's implied that he may have been a friend of Duane's.
Mm.
So there's the people will keep working the connections back into place.
Of course, it does seem like a lot of people want to believe Duane did something here.
There's a lot of people who want to believe several people are guilty every time.
Yeah.
There are people really working to pin this on certain individuals.
I'm just going to go ahead and say one final thought before we move on, and that is Not only is that an insane level of crazy for Dwayne to be over a job to like potentially murder someone, but to also rope in one of his friends to be like, oh my God, I hate this woman at work so much. I hate my boss so much that I'm going to murder her.
Or why hire don't you to murder her.
Why don't you come in on it with me? That's an even next level of insanity.
Well, that's called, you know, like creating more witnesses.
Yeah.
Yeah. And more
and
guys.
We know how Joe feels about that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We do. Leave no witnesses. Yeah. There, yeah.
Okay, so.
Okay. She finds the note. Mm-hmm. We're going to go back to that. She finds the note, death to her.
Death to her.
She freaks out. I personally think she was trying to get a PTO day because she gets the rest of the day off.
Ah, I got to remember
and
that.
Her bosses tell her not to come in on the next day at all. Later that day, Dwayne comes in. He apparently was going to come in to either submit or to check that his time card had gone in to be submitted for pay. Mm-hmm. It's at that point that he is confronted about this whole thing with McGinnis on the desk calendar and her desk. Depending on the accountings, the level of the escalation of this varies, but he is confronted. He is then escorted out of the building and told not to return.
Hmm.
He's not actually fired, just so you know, because he didn't work directly for Union Carbide. Apparently, he worked for a contracting company.
Mm-hmm.
And so after a period of time, he was transferred to another facility. So he didn't actually get fired, though it's always referred to as fired. If you read the post from Dwayne himself, he explains that part of it.
Uh-huh.
So but they tell him not to come back.
So he didn't lose his job?
He didn't lose his job.
Well, that's good because, frankly, you know, I think that it very likely was not him who scrawled the death threat.
Well, we don't even know if it's a death threat, Joe, and we're going to talk about that later. But
yeah, that's not even really a death threat. That's just like
that's a
weird scrawling.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was Friday the 13th, let's not forget.
Yeah.
There's also, in the depending on the version you read, there's something to the effect of after they escort Dwayne out of the building, he's at the window banging at it, screaming to talk to Mary McGinnis Morris.
I just generally...
way more out there.
I just generally don't believe that people are that crazy. I mean, there are like people that are that crazy in this world, but generally speaking, I feel like you would, you know, at this point in the story, we'd be saying, and here's the insane history of Dwayne and his life
and
how he's been an insane person his entire life.
Although, in fairness, you know, I mean, you're talking a building. He can't come back in the door because he's told he's not welcome there.
Mm-hmm.
But he wants to talk to Mary. It's one of those big ones with non-opening windows. He's banging on the windows, which are thick, by the way, trying to get somebody's attention. And then he has to, in order to make his voice heard,
he's got
to
scream.
He's got to yell, I want to talk to Mary, you know, and it doesn't mean he's gone nuts. It might just mean he thinks
he's
still
trying to be heard.
And he would like to speak with her.
So you know? I was going to talk about this later on, but we'll just talk about this real briefly now, which is, like I said, depending on the version that you hear, that's
are you
going to
talk about
hear.
The car chases?
No, there's no car chases.
No, there were actually reportedly like about 17 high-speed car chases in the Houston area. A lot of explosions, 3 buildings burned to the ground about this time. You didn't hear about any of this? This is part of the whole killer cyborg from the future theory. You're not going to talk about that at all?
No.
Oh.
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay, fine.
No,
fine.
What I was going to talk about was...
We'll talk about it later then, for Christ's sakes.
Okay. No, what I was going to talk about is the fact that Dwayne has been very vocal and he's gone on the internet about this, but what seems to have prompted him to do so is the fact that this particular story was covered by Unsolved Mysteries back in 2002.
Mm.
And yes, I know, I did 2 Unsolved Mystery episodes in a row. I'm really trying to screw with people until they're all available on the internet, so Amazon take the hint.
Mm-hmm.
But this is on there, and in that episode, the actor who portrays him does a bit of an over-the-top job of acting out his part of banging on the windows and screaming for her, and that seems to have set him off on his campaign of self-defense, which you will find on many, many boards.
Okay. Mm.
All right. Well, let's go. Let's move forward from that possible reason that would have created the situation that Mary McGinnis Morris could have been killed.
And so Dwayne wanted to, like, you know, murder her
for everything that happened at the job. Mm. The second possible thing in her life that could have set this situation up is potentially an affair and a marriage that was on the rocks. When Mike and Mary McGinnis Morris moved to the area, like I said, she came for that job. Her husband, Mike, didn't. And I don't know if he had a job and he lost it or he just never got one, but he seems to have had some issues in securing employment for 2 years.
Well,
that's a long time.
It is. And that does some terrible things to a person when you're trying to find work for that long.
Oh, yeah.
They have a teenage daughter, so I know that he probably, you know, spent a lot of time with her daughter because he could. But there is also accusations of infidelity. He suspected that his wife was having an affair. And he says when he confronted them, they looked him in the eye and convinced him that there was nothing untoward going on.
Yeah, sure.
They.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know who the second person in the they is, but I also know that some places you'll read that say that McGinnis had confided in friends that she had found somebody and she was in love, but she wasn't going to leave Mike because of her daughter. She wasn't willing to split the marriage up. People do that. They put their own happiness after that of their children in the security, which is normal.
Yeah.
But that appears to be what she said she was doing it.
Well, I mean, you know, there's also like puppy love crushes. I mean, when you're with somebody for 30, 40 years, you're going to find a person every once in a while, you're attracted to that person. But when you're married and you can make your commitment to the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you're bright enough by the time you reach that age, you're not going to actually, you know, move on that.
Run after the first thing that seems, you know, sparkly
hopefully
fun.
You have enough brains not to do that.
Yeah, I mean, she's a 39-year-old lady. She should know better.
Yeah.
But
it sounds like she did.
Maybe, yeah.
At least vocally to her friends.
It does. But Mike didn't entirely appear to trust her, though he said he did, because he was known to follow her around.
Mm-hmm. I know you think
that's not creepy at all.
I think,
sign of a very normal, loving relationship.
Yep.
I do it to my wife all the time. Honey, it's not really me, I swear.
Okay. I'm going to have a little conversation with your wife.
Yeah, don't do that.
Actually, with the modern electronic devices, you don't even need to follow people around physically anymore. You can really monitor the crap out of somebody.
Yeah, you really
just
can.
Just through their phone.
Yeah, what's that little thing you put on your keychain? You can just toss that in somebody's car and track it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't even need to do that. You just have to like convince them it's a good idea to have the Find My Friends part activated.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really dumb. I'm really bad at convincing people to use other technology, so hiding technology is my
That's
my
a lot advice. Easier way to go. Yeah.
Okay. Final thing, whether it is Mike or somebody else, which it possibly could be, the final thing about Mary McGinnis Morris that could have put her into this situation is that she had a rather sizable life insurance policy. It was somewhere, depending on the source, between $500,000 to $700,000.
What is that in today's money?
Like $505,000?
Yeah, actually, Joe's pretty right.
Yeah,
there's
not
much between
maybe a little
now.
More. It was only the year 2000, so it's not that best.
That's like almost 20 years ago. Just
no,
so
there
know.
Is a difference, though. Yeah.
But it's not a huge difference.
Yeah.
Not as huge, yeah.
Now, why exactly? I mean, well, it seems pretty obvious why that would matter, but we're going to delve into some of the reasons of why that $500,000 to $700,000 really could have been really, really important here.
Well, geez, I wonder why.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm going to go jump on the internet and I'm going to research why $500,000 to $700,000 in life insurance is important. So while I'm doing that, let's take a quick break.
All right. Hey, folks, if you watch TV, then you probably know that your town has at least two mattress store chains. And if there's one thing those guys have in common, it's that their commercials are all really annoying. Wouldn't you like to see those commercials go away? Well, now you can make that happen and get a great night's sleep while you're at it. Thanks to the folks at Casper, there's a whole new mattress game in town. Casper Mattress was named by Time Magazine as one of the best inventions of 2015. And there's a reason for it. Their Very well engineered with memory foam to create a great sleep surface, which I really love. I have a Casper mattress, and it's great. It's the best mattress I've ever had. So you can order one today, risk-free, for 100 nights from their website. You click here, click there, type in a few things. You know the drill. And your new Casper mattress will be delivered to your door. Try it out for a few weeks or months, and if you don't love it, which I doubt, but if you don't, Casper will pick it up, no cost to you, and refund all your money. Casper offers no-cost shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. With over 20,000 reviews and 4.8 stars, they're on their way to becoming the Internet's favorite mattress, and I know it's my favorite. So, get $50 off towards any mattress purchase by going to www.casper.com/sideways and using the offer code SIDEWAYS. That's www.casper.com/sideways. And remember that offer code, SIDEWAYS. So, put an annoying mattress store out of business and get a great night's sleep with Casper.
And we're back. And it turns out it's important because it's $500,000 to $700,000. And I don't know how I didn't figure that out the first time.
Yeah.
So, it's $500,000 to $700,000 depending on how she died or what?
Depending on the policy and the reporting that you look at. That's where the variance and the figure is. It's either 500 or 700.
Well, $500,000 is $500,000. I mean...
It's a half a million reasons.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd kill. I mean, I... No, of course not.
No, you wouldn't do that. I know you wouldn't.
No.
You'd blame it on Choopy.
You're not secretly a murderer.
No. So let's go ahead and get into theories.
All right.
Theory number one, which is the internet's most popular theory,
is that
this was totally a hit gone wrong.
Uh-huh. Or a killer cyborg.
No, not killer cyborgs. You got to stop inserting that
one. No killer
cyborg
from the future?
Nope. This is not Terminator.
Oh,
yeah, they got the wrong Mary Morris. That's where you're going with this. Now I see what you're doing.
They just decided, I don't know, all I got is a name, so I'll just get the phone book out.
Yeah. No, Arnold is not involved.
Damn it.
Nope. No T-9000s. Okay, so the theory is that someone, be it Mike or Dwayne or somebody else, they put out a hit on Mary McGinnis Morris. Mm. It turns out that whoever did this hired the hitman equivalent of Mr. Magoo.
Yeah.
And that person killed Mary Henderson Morris instead of Mary McGinnis Morris in the mistaken belief they got the right person. And then when they figured out they had killed the wrong person, they went back to then do the job right, which is why Mary McGinnis Morris was subsequently killed.
Well, they don't. I mean, they're both white women, approximately the same height, approximately the same build.
10 years apart, less than 10 years apart.
About the same hair color, too, even.
Same hair length, basically, as well.
Yeah, I mean, they look pretty similar.
They drove cars that, though they were different makes from different manufacturers,
they look similar, too.
They were very similar, basic, blah sedans.
Yeah.
Were they the same color and everything?
I can't remember the color, but I know that Henderson had a Chevy Lumina.
Oh, was she the first one or the second one?
Yes, Mary Henderson Morris had the Lumina.
Okay.
And then Mary McGinnis Morris had a Dodge. Was it an Intrepid?
Yeah.
Which, if you look at those models in, say, within a 4-year age time bracket of the year 2000, they look basically the same. Mm. They're just, as I refer to them, blah sedans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They all look the same. So there's nothing really distinct. So that's what this is based on. This theory then instantly splits into several sub-theories. Before we hit those sub-theories, though, There's something that you'll always see in the reading, which I don't completely agree with, but that reading will always say that point out how Mary Henderson Morris's wedding ring was missing. Mm-hmm. And it will also say that is typically done because supposedly hitmen take the wedding ring of the person they're killing to prove that the hit happened.
I thought it was their heads.
Or their hands.
Or a finger. Or an eyeball.
Okay.
Frankly, I don't see the point to it because, I mean, you know, you're going to find, if you read the papers, you'll find out whether he succeeded or not, right?
In Hollywood, this makes sense. In a situation where it's a drug kingpin trying to track down a snitch who is in hiding and you have to bring back proof of the kill, maybe I could see that.
Well, but even
for a man that goes to bed every night with that woman...
Yeah, well, but I mean, even then, it's like, it's not, it's a ring. It comes off a person's live body. It's not, there's no proof in anything on a wedding ring. And furthermore, the fact that her purse and her wedding ring were missing just means that somebody wanted a little extra dough on the side.
Could be that.
Because you could just pawn all that stuff off. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that they took it as a token to, like, prove that they had successfully done something. No. That's right. Silly.
And yeah. Also, by the way, well, people take their wedding rings off from time to time. And not because they're screwing around. Maybe they're cleaning or whatever.
Yeah, but, no, I take a shower, I take mine off, and then I've forgotten it. And hours later, I'm like, oh, crap.
I guess I'm not married. Woo-hoo! Yeah, but
finally.
Yeah, right on. But the wedding ring, was it ever found? Never found.
Never located.
I guess one possibility, I don't know, I'm sorry, again, we could be just jumping the gun here a little bit, but I guess one possibility is since the car was so destroyed, the perp thought that it probably would make it much harder to identify the body if he took the wedding ring and the purse with him. Right? Because they wouldn't melt as much. So if, you know,
the
they were able to say like,
melt.
Oh, that's the wedding ring. That's her wedding ring.
Those
or,
are the stones.
Yeah, if things
like that,
didn't melt or didn't burn as much.
Did you know, did they say anything about finding, like, say, a gold nugget in the car?
No. No. Didn't talk about the,
yeah,
the
no, right. We did find the
gold nugget in her car. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I personally have different feelings as to why Henderson's car was burned, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
But, like I said, it doesn't make any sense that if you're the guy that goes to bed with this woman every night in the same bed, that you would need proof.
Not really.
And if it's Dwayne, it doesn't make any sense because you run in the same circles and you know all the same people. So again, this is the silly thing, the hitman, but we're going to run down the hit theories. Hit theory number one is that Mike set it up. And there are a lot of things that make people think that Mike set up the hit. But if he did some really dumb things. The first of which is that there is a 4-minute call from his phone to his wife's phone 2 hours after the 911 call came in.
From her to the police. That frantic 911
call. Right, her 911 call to the cops 2 hours later. 2 hours later, there's a 4-minute call logged from his phone to her
phone.
And
we are talking a cell phone, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. They are cell phones. When confronted about it, he said that there's got to be a problem with the phone company because what he did is he just let it ring and ring and ring in hopes that she would pick up.
And
it just kept ringing. Well, yeah. And this is the year 2000 when voicemail was not a default feature on a call plan. You had to enroll and pay for it.
Was it?
Yes. I worked for, we talked about this a week or two ago. I worked for a phone company at this time, and you had to enroll and pay. Certain plans required you to pay for voicemail. So they probably didn't have voicemail.
That could be. And Mike might have actually been in one of those stubborn moods where he just said, screw you. I know you're there. I'm just going to set the phone down and let it ring and ring and ring and ring.
The problem is it should not have registered as a call.
Yeah, it shouldn't because it wasn't picked up. Yeah. It wasn't picked up.
Yes.
Unless it was picked up by voicemail, but...
Or picked up by somebody.
It shouldn't have rung for 4 minutes.
Right. It should have it should have gotten the eventual disconnect from the phone company and not sat there that
long.
Well,
although I will say, at least every voicemail I've ever had, the default is that the voicemail will cut you off after 5 minutes. It'll let you leave a 5-minute long message, and that's the max. So I don't know what it was at that point, but I guess it's possible... He maybe, you know, called and thought he hung up and put the phone down and it rang and it hit voicemail and then it was just a blank message. But even then, they should have found... Yeah, no, I don't like it.
The cell company should have ended the call after about a minute. Yeah. That's apparently typical.
Yeah.
So that's one problem. There, like we talked about, you know, they would have had to have had the voicemail for what you're talking about for it to have gone through and eventually gotten kicked off. Mm-hmm. I've never seen any records that show the call on Mary's records and Mike's records to show it a real call. Because to me, if it's a real connected call, it should be registered on both phone A and phone B.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen that, so I can't confirm that that's truly what happens here. But the police are pretty sure that he is just lying through his teeth, because the problem is that he had no reason to think that his wife was missing at that point.
Well, unless he had hired a hitman to kill her.
Okay. If you're on the side of Mike is innocent and he didn't do it,
yeah.
It for him to have made a 4-minute ringing, I'm going to get your attention, answer the phone call. Mm. He has said, I was distraught and I just let it ring and ring and ring in hopes that she would answer it.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. The other problem is he was at the movie theater with his daughter. Why would he be freaking out? I mean, okay, maybe Mary was supposed to meet them at the theater. And she didn't show up, but sitting there for 4 minutes ringing, ringing, ringing is pretty extreme.
Well, a bit. Two things. One is I stand by my theory that it's possible that he thought he hung up and he didn't.
Yeah.
There's that.
But except that. He said that he let it ring that. So he affirmed that he sat there with a phone to his face for 4 minutes.
Okay. The other thing I'll say is that apparently he was following her with his car because he really didn't trust her. So if he, in his mind, had, you know, worked up that she was with her lover, for him to just be like, again, as Joe said, you know, kind of like, screw you, I know you're there. I'm going to leave this phone ringing while you're, you know, getting it on with your lover, because that'll be a distraction. And
entirely possible.
And you'll have to, you know, confront me at some point.
I'm not going
to
discredit that at all.
I can get myself to that insane headspace on my most insane hormonal moments. But I mean, it's still, it's not a great theory.
And it's a little counter to some of the things that he said.
Yeah.
I totally understand where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. He said some things that make it seem that it can't be.
I think you would say, I thought she was cheating on me, so I let it ring because I was trying to get a hold of her, not, I thought she was missing, you know.
And by the way, her cell phone was found in her car, correct?
I can't say yes to that because it's never stated if it was. The case is technically open, so of course the records from the police are not available. I don't know if indeed her phone was found there. I was gonna say at one point, well, I saw a picture of her phone record, but except I don't know that that's actually real, because as we talked about in the last story that I did, it was an Unsolved Mysteries episode.
And so
I think that's some kind of mocked up phone record.
Sure.
So I have no idea. I can't say if her phone was there or not.
Yeah. But, you know, if he wasn't calling her, if he was calling the hitman, that makes absolutely no sense
either. It's the stupidest thing in the world to do.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
any idiot should know better.
Well, the hitman, if he has a cell phone, yeah, I'm sure he does. I mean, yeah, the whole idea of calling the hitman on his wife's cell phone is kind of silly.
Yeah.
Super silly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's keep going forward, though, with the mic setup, the hit theory. Another thing that makes people finger him as the bad guy is that his wife was known to wear a ring that wasn't on her body at the time that it was found.
Now,
and this isn't her wedding ring.
Not a wedding ring.
Not a wedding ring.
Was her wedding ring on her, by the way?
I don't know that. But this was another ring. I have to presume it was. But this is, you know, I mean, women wear multiple rings, and some wear a certain ring all the time, and she was known to wear one of these rings on a regular basis, and it was not there with her body. He reported it missing to the police, but then his daughter was seen wearing that ring several months later, at which point when he was confronted with it, he said that he had found it in the house, and he had just forgot to tell the cops, which, if you think about this from the angle of a man who has lost his wife and is trying to deal with his grieving daughter, and he finds a ring, or his daughter finds the ring, he's not going to make a big deal out of it because he's trying to hold his friggin' life together. I can see how this is not a big thing to call the cops and say, oh, hey, that sterling silver ring she wore all the time with the little etching on it, yeah, we found it.
Especially,
he might have not considered it to be all that important.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Especially if, you know, they said, okay, so what was she usually wearing? And he, you know, would have said, I don't know, she, you know, a shirt that looked like this, and she often wore this ring, and, you know, jeans, and probably these shoes, and that, you know, and that's, you know, in the heat of the moment when you're worried about your wife, life that you say that, and then, you know, months later you find that ring, you're not going to think, oh, the police will want to know about this. You're mm-hmm. going to just say, oh, this was a ring that was really special to your mother.
Right.
You should have it.
Or the daughter finds it and says, I found mom's ring. Mm-hmm. Honey, wear the ring. Take it. If it makes you feel, if it helps, do it. Yes. Do whatever you got.
Yeah. Whatever. You know, hawk it and buy some drugs. Do whatever you got to do, honey.
No, that's not what happened.
Let's not do that.
Now, before people, I've said a couple of statements. I feel like maybe I've defended Mike a little bit. I also have kind of beat on him a little bit for the stupid things if he was the one who did this. There's some other things that Mike has done that a lot of people don't like that have put him in the hot seat, number one of which is the fact that he lawyered up almost immediately.
Well, mm-hmm. I would.
Yeah.
If my boyfriend, if he had a life policy, a life insurance policy of, you know, $500,000 to $700K, and then he showed up murdered somewhere, I would immediately get a lawyer. Of course. Yeah.
How often have we seen cases where the husband just innocently walks in and is like, okay, I'll answer your questions. And they're suddenly prime suspect, only to then months later, after being drugged through the mud.
Or jailed.
Get released with a little, sorry.
Yeah.
Oops.
But we've also seen it go the other way, where they walked in, they answered all the questions, and the police fingered him, and sure as hell, they turned out to be the one that was guilty and did it. So you can see why the cops, but you can also see where he's coming from. I mean, like, I get why he lawyered up.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he also refused to let the cops talk to his daughter. And people were really upset about that because...
How old was she?
She was a teenager. She was, I think, 14 at the time.
Okay.
But I, again, so the cops want to talk to her, and he doesn't let them talk to her for a good 2 months. And I can see that, again, this is the father who is trying to defend his daughter and insulate and protect her. And it's not till a certain amount of time that he feels like she's ready. Or the other side of the camp is, this is a man who is responsible, and he is very carefully crafting and curating his daughter's responses and statements to the situation.
Let's be honest.
Like, it's both sides.
There's never going to be a winning reaction. I mean, we talk about this a lot on this show, that the spouse or family of people who show up murdered or disappeared, there's never the right way to react. People are always going to suspect you, and people are always going to think you're innocent, no matter what the situation is. And that's just, I mean, unfortunately, that's the truth of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, so, but yeah, as far as, I don't know, she might have, it could be suspicious, I don't know.
Well, you know,
eventually he let her talk, though, so.
He did.
So whatever she had to say, she got to tell it to the police. So.
True, yeah. He also famously refused to take a polygraph, which I think we've talked ad nauseum about how unreliable polygraphs are, but he also said, listen, I'm on a bunch of medication right now. He was taking stuff for the stress and the anxiety and the depression. And he really, I think, probably correctly so, didn't think that the police could adequately calibrate the polygraph to accommodate for that.
Yeah, well, that's fair.
In other words, I don't think you can.
There are them that say that even without the stress and the drugs, that you can't calibrate them because they're kind of voodoo.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's that too.
They are.
Yeah.
So, speaking of voodoo, currently I have a little voodoo doll of Mike in my hand, and I am randomly sticking needles in it.
Sorry,
and
Mike.
Let me go ahead and stick one more needle in it, which is to talk about his wife's car.
Okay.
Her car was a car that we're really used to this today. You put it in drive and you start to move and the doors lock, the auto lock function. That's super common now, but that was not super common in 2000. But people say, well, if his wife was in a car that had possibly been moving, then the doors would have auto-locked, and so there's no way the bad guy could have got into it. So he had to have given said bad guy the key to either get into it when it was parked and hide in the back seat in that old movie trope thing, or have the beeper and beeper the door open and open the door and got it while she was sitting there parked somewhere and having locked the doors.
Well, you know, there's also the possibility that she was actually jumped or approached or whatever outside the car.
In fact,
based on her 911 call, I have to say that that's exactly what happened, because if she had been inside the car and come under enough of an attack or a threat or whatever to have a panic call to 911, all she had to do was lock the doors and then reach down under her driver's seat where she had a gun. So obviously she made that call. She must have made that call from outside the car. Either that or she's just a much flightier person than I had thought.
And yeah, she's and I don't think she's nearly as flighty as that makes her sound.
Yeah, dumb enough to forget that she can lock her car, and also she's got a pistol like stored under her seat.
Did you say, I may have forgotten, what seat she was in when she was found?
Because I don't know.
Okay.
The passenger door was open, so it gives me the inclination that she was, and she was found lying in the car, so I presume that she was lying across the front seats.
Very possible.
Yeah.
From passenger side, head pointing towards driver's door.
Okay.
But I also want to, so this is, you brought up something, Joe, that I want to talk about, which is I don't understand people who just stick a handgun under the seat of the driver's seat, like it's going to Velcro itself to the floor and never move.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, things bounce around in cars so much that the I've got a gun under my seat thing is just, I've never understood that. If you were, I strapped it to something.
You actually can, like, put it in a holster and tie the holster or, you know, duct tape the holster to something. There's ways to keep it.
Yeah, people do it under steering column, stuff like that. But it's just like, just to set it there.
I don't know.
Insane.
Yeah, but we don't know that she had just tossed a loose gun under the seat.
We also don't know that she affixed it to anything.
Yeah.
So that's so like when I talked about, you know, maybe somebody snuck into the car when she wasn't in it and was hiding there, and maybe the gun had rattled backwards. So they're crouched. It's October. They're crouched down in the back of her car. It's after 5 at night, which it's going to be dark. And like, hey, put the hand. Hey, what the hell is? Oh, this is a gun.
Nice.
Oh, this is way better than the knife I brought with me.
Yeah, sweet.
Like, these things I don't get. It does not make any sense. But
do you know what kind of gun it was?
I want to say it was a 38. And I have no good reason to say that.
For some reason, I think that, too.
Yeah. So totally. I mean, it's not the biggest handgun in the world, but...
Well, you don't know what make or anything like that?
No. I just remember the caliber being mentioned, and that's about it. Here's the other thing about her, about this whole her key thing and the auto lock thing. There's a whole bunch of stuff in the news right now as we're recording about people who are being tricked out of their cars by people either laying in the road or putting dummies in the road.
I was just going to bring that one up.
And tricking someone to get out of their car, at which point they ambush them. So it's entirely possible that Mary McGinnis Morris, drives her car somewhere down West Little York, and there's a dummy in the road, and she gets out because she thinks it's a person hurt, and then she is attacked. And maybe that's where the 911 call comes, is that she's, you know, I mean, I don't know, but it's very plausible.
It is, except for that she had just not so long earlier said that there was a person following her that gave her the creeps. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a woman who is not a registered nurse or, you know, anything like that, I have my sense of self-preservation comes before my sense of preserving other people's lives, but
right.
Especially if I had, you know, a couple hours before been super creeped out by somebody, or, you know, however much time, I would not stop.
Minutes. But she was also described, Lori Gemmel described it as saying that she was matter of fact about it. It wasn't,
oh my God,
this guy's freaking me out. I was like, this guy's giving me the creeps.
Even then, though, I would not, and I'm a different woman than this woman is,
yes.
And that's fair, but I wouldn't stop for anyone, especially, I mean, like, normally I wouldn't stop for anyone, and then especially if I had been observing somebody that was giving me the creeps, I would especially not stop.
So when you got back in your car after the drugstore and you saw the creepy guy, would you feel around under the seat and find out where the gun was?
Probably, but I probably would have holstered it somewhere, so.
Yeah, you wouldn't have it under your seat anyway, rattling around.
So I believe that's all that we've got for this particular theory about Mike.
Mike set up the hit.
There's some more about Mike later, but we've also still got to flesh out the it was a hit, but Dwayne set it up.
Okay, let's
so
do that.
So that's sub theory number two.
We're still on the hitman here, huh?
Yeah, we're still in the hitman theory.
We're still on the hitman that was Mr. Magoo and accidentally killed the wrong woman at first.
Correct, got the wrong Mary Morris. Yeah. So Dwayne is also super popular all over the internet as being the bad guy. And I will say that he would have known her habits because he worked with her. He knew where she lived because he had been to her house for a party once. But then again, she had been to his house once. So there's this whole thing of maybe the two men had met, in other words, Mike and Dwayne. But supposedly the man, like I said earlier, the man that she saw in the Eckerd drug was one of Dwayne's friends, which would indicate that guy was who Dwayne had hired to take her out. That all seems to kind of make sense, except for this massive problem to me of timing. Mary Henderson Morris was killed on a Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
Dwayne was let go or locked out of the building on Friday.
The Friday before or the Friday after?
Friday after. The day after.
Yeah.
Henderson is killed on the 12th. McGinnis gets him kicked out of the building on Friday the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole he hired the hitman thing, like you could see him escalating to people say, well, he got so angry about getting fired that he just in a rage hired this person who then he sent back in time, I guess.
Yeah.
So there's an issue with the timeline there. So the other thing that I look at with the whole death calendar thing, death to her, if he didn't like her so much, it seems weird. I think we talked about this before, to write that down and to, you know, to make that kind of statement on a calendar. But we also don't know if it's his calendar. And we also don't know if it's even in relation to her.
Yeah,
because
you don't even know that it was written by him.
Well, the thing that
even if it was his calendar and his desk.
What I think about is that they worked in the health industry, and there is such a thing as assisted suicide, and assisted suicide is not legal in the state of Texas. However, the withholding of life-sustaining procedures is acceptable if it's at the patient's request. And I pulled up from that time the way that it's worded, because it's a little strange, but I see where the loophole is that it says, the effect of withholding of life-sustaining procedures, withdrawal or withholding of life-sustaining procedures does not constitute offense of aiding suicide. So it could very well have been that somebody's family came in and said, listen, Grandma's been on a ventilator for 6 months and has not woke up. It's time to turn off Grandma's ventilator. And it could have been as simple as that.
Well, maybe, except he was working, I assume, just at sort of an employee health office at Union Carbide, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's not the kind of place where you got people on, like, you know, ventilators.
But they're doing health services there. I don't know exactly what happened at that facility. I'd be very honest with you, Joe. I also don't know if Dwayne only worked in that facility or as part of his job with Union Carbide was to go to other facilities. I mean, there's a whole slew of things that death to her could have meant.
What about a concert?
That's a weird band name, but okay.
Is it really, though? I mean, death metal?
No, actually, it's not.
Or a movie. He meant, you know, Death Becomes Her.
Well,
he was going to go see that with somebody. I mean, like,
he got it so wrong.
It's not that wrong. Death Becomes Her, Death to Her. I mean, you know, it's an unfortunate mistake given the circumstances, but it's not like that weird of a mistake. I mean, you know, granted, it seems like he would be saying all these things if any of these were the thing. But
and the stuff is, the fact is that McGinnis seems to be the one. Okay, I was about to say that McGinnis seems to have been the one that made all the statements about Dwayne. But then I also realized the fallacy in that statement, which is she is the one that died. And therefore, all of her friends and family are recounting the things that she had said.
Yeah.
If we flip the tables and she had lived and Dwayne had been hunted down and shot in a supposed suicide position, we probably would have heard flip side things
yeah.
from his friends and relatives.
For sure, yeah.
So I'm going to take that back. I mean, but the timeline with Dwayne
oh, no, I agree with
is
that.
My biggest,
yeah, it's a bad
my
timeline.
Biggest difficulty because mm-hmm. it just doesn't work.
Unless they're, you know, not connected.
Which
there's the unconnected part.
Yeah, which is the very next theory.
I know.
Well,
it's
you know,
like
actually,
I looked ahead in the script or something.
Well, they could be connected in other ways. So, well, supposing Dwayne's a very clever guy, you had a problem with the timeline. But supposing Dwayne, after this outrageous thing, where you know, basically, it looked to me like somebody just was trying to get him fired from his job.
Okay.
He's angry, goes home, sitting around, drinking a beer, cooling off, and looks in the papers and sees, whoa, Mary Morris died. Hey, cool. And then he reads the article and realizes it's not the same Mary Morris. But then he thinks about it and thinks, wait a second. If I were to knock off my Mary Morris, it would look, you know, let's pick up the phone. Let's call the newspaper, say they got the wrong Mary Morris. And then I'll go knock her off, and it'll look like a hit gone wrong.
So you have made part 1A of the next theory. I will now talk about part 1B, which is very similar. And this one, you have said they're unconnected, but it's Dwayne. I had that it's unconnected, but it's Mike.
Yeah.
For very similar reasons. Sees that she's been killed, Henderson has been killed, and ooh, this would be really convenient, and then has his wife knocked off, at which point he
or
can
knocks
then
her off himself.
Well, I don't think he can knock her off himself because he's at the movie theater with his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So the timeline does, I think, is too tight for that.
Mm-hmm.
But he could then begin this campaign of disinformation and, you know, mudslinging at Dwayne for what was maybe not such a big deal at the office to his wife, but in the retellings, it becomes, as we've seen with retellings, bigger and bigger and bigger to grander scales. So both, it could be unconnected, and one or the other of them could have taken advantage of the just random happenstance of a Mary Morris having been killed.
But it would be a little different than the Dwayne theory because if he hired a hitman, it would have taken a lot longer than just a few days to go find somebody, you know, and have them knock his wife off, right?
If he had not been planning to have his wife killed prior to that, it's, you're right.
Seems like, yeah.
But if he had been thinking, I want to get her killed, or he was drinking with a buddy on Saturday afternoon and the dude was like, you give me $5,000, I'll kill her.
Hey.
I'll just totally kill her.
What's to say Mike didn't call Dwayne up?
It's also possible. This is where these theories get so interwoven because, like we said, they had met.
Yeah.
They knew, they at least in passing knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
And for differing reasons, they could have wanted Mary McGinnis Morris dead.
The other thing I'm just going to go ahead and throw out here.
This is like a throw mama from the train scenario.
Well, it's just been swirling around in my head is that, so we don't know who Mary was having the affair with or was not. Apparent, quote unquote,
we don't.
Was not.
No, I've never seen the name mentioned.
Okay, and so we're pretty sure though it wasn't Dwayne, and that this was all a show to keep there from being some kind of problems with HR.
As far as I know, it
or
was
there
not
was a
Dwayne.
Breakup happening?
I had the same thought of could it have been Dwayne, and maybe that's what soured things between them.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I know, it was not
okay.
Dwayne. He has not said that. He apparently was in a relationship the whole time. So if it was Dwayne, he had a very good reason to not admit it.
Yeah.
Yeah, presumably the police know about this. So, but of course, as usual, they're being piggish about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And not sharing their files with us.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's pretty much the end of that theory.
Yeah, we have. So let's go on to what I have as the final theory.
Okay.
Which is that they were completely and totally unrelated.
Entirely possible.
And when I stop and I think about them and you start to look at the scenes, people always say that, well, it was the hitman and he did this and he did this, but they're not all that related to me. Mary Henderson, We don't know exactly how she was killed, but she was killed, and a couple of things were stolen. We know were stolen, and then she and her car were incinerated. McGinnis Morris, Mary McGinnis Morris, was beaten, gagged, and shot, and left to be discovered and not burned.
But also in her car.
But at the vehicle is the only real similarity. And in a city that at that time had a population of over 2 million people, it's not all that surprising that a rather common name of Mary Morris, you could have in a weekend two people with the same name being killed.
Oh, for sure.
It's not astronomical.
Yeah, not at all.
We haven't talked about Mary Henderson Morris too much in this last half hour, I'm going to guess, as it's been so far. Let's talk about her for a minute, and let's talk about the reasons that her body may have been treated the way it was. It is entirely possible that something happened at the time that whoever did it wanted to cover up. If you think about 2000, CSI had been on for about a year. The whole country was just obsessed with blood spatter analysis. Like, everybody's figuring out how this stuff works. Okay, so what would be a motive to abduct a woman? Sadly, rape.
Yep.
Okay, so what is an easy way to hide the evidence of a sexual encounter that was not mutual with a body? Yeah. You burn it.
Yeah.
You burn the whole thing, and there is not a bit of DNA evidence left over. So to me,
but what time? I'm sorry. What time was this? It was like early in the morning.
She left her house at 6. The fire was reported at 10.
Okay.
So there's time in between
for her to be
caught, abducted, and taken somewhere, and then dumped and burned.
This is probably not a thing you should say, but it just seems really early in the morning for a crime like that.
Maybe the guy's been up all night.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but I understand what
you're
saying.
But for some reason, it
seems like the rapists would all be out and about from 9 p.m. on.
Yeah.
But apparently that's not the case.
Maybe this guy worked the graveyard shift.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. Or maybe he's just a dude and he woke up and was like, I'm going to do some raping today. I don't know. I mean, that sounds hideous, but that's what people do.
Yeah.
Okay, so that to me is a reason why her crime scene would have been treated the way that it was. And as for why her wedding ring and purse were taken, but her other jewelry was left behind, well, there may have not been an immediate presumed value to what she was wearing. Maybe she was wearing ceramic earrings and a necklace that didn't have any obvious value. And why take it and then try and figure that out? That's a lot of work. Screw it. That's a gold and diamond, and I know you have cash in your purse because she was known to use cash and not credit cards, so she would have had cash in her wallet, which would encourage somebody to just take the whole damn purse.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense, whereas McGinnis Morris, all of her belongings were there.
Except possibly for her cell phone.
Except possibly for her cell phone, but all of her stuff is there. So, like, these are the MOs to me, the motives or the treatments are very, very different for one hitman
to
have done it.
I agree, but the other reason that you might try to cleanse a case or a crime scene like that is if you have accidentally killed the wrong person and you are trying to cover up that crime as much as possible.
There's that.
Right? You know, go through her wallet and go, oops, this isn't the right person at all. So you take everything and you burn it. I mean, I don't think it's great, but
I doubt that a husband would say, my wife's name is Mary McGinnis Morris. Please kill Mary McGinnis Morris and make sure you get Mary McGinnis Morris. And here's this photo of us. Look, quick. Okay, go get her. You know, the hitman is going to say, "It's the ID says Mary H. Morris or Mary M. Morris.
Well, more than that, the hitman's got to know. He can't just, like, go driving around town until he runs across her.
Yeah.
He's got to know, like, where she lives or where she works or both, preferably.
True.
So it's hard to mix the two up.
I mean, they cross their roots of, you know, versus workplaces versus home spaces. There was some intersection between the two.
Mm.
So it is possible that our Mr. Magoo hitman inadvertently spotted the wrong Mary and said, oh, well, this Mary is supposed to be in this area, so that must be her.
But no, I agree with you. I think it's unlikely.
Yeah, extremely unlikely. I mean, again, you're going to Union Carbide to look for Mary, 48, works as a medical director.
39.
That's right. I got it mixed up there. You're not going to run across the other Mary and say, oh, there goes the other Mary Morris. You have no idea that her name is Mary Morris because nobody's told you anything about her.
No. No, and hitmen don't tend to stand out to the office and say, excuse me, what's your name? I got a contract. What's your name? Mm-hmm. They don't do that.
No.
Well, now the other way they could be related is that imagine that the killer was actually Mary One's husband, Jay Morris. That would explain why the body was burned for the first one. Because, first of all, I mean, you've knocked off your wife, and obviously you're the husband. You're going to be the first suspect. So, you know, what do? You go knock off another Mary Morris shortly thereafter. Therefore, it's immediately people are going to be thinking hit gone wrong. And obviously the attention is going to shift to Mike and off of you.
Regardless of, okay, so now you're casting shade on Jay Morris. Okay, but
just saying it's a possibility.
I'm not going to disagree with that, but regardless, I would imagine that, and this is just in my guesses about this whole thing, as I've already said, I would think that if you were gonna off somebody and you were gonna dispose of their body, you would do it one way, and the second time you had to do it, you would probably most likely follow the same pattern because people are not that creative.
Unless you got interrupted.
Yeah, there's that. Well, you don't really need to. I mean, think about why he might have burned the body in the first case.
Besides hiding evidence?
Well, besides hiding evidence.
Okay.
Because he doesn't need to hide DNA evidence, assuming that it was his wife.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine the body hadn't been burned. Then what would he have had to do? He would have had to go down to the morgue and identify the body, correct?
Right.
And most people, at least if you're a smart murderer, you're going to know your limitations. And you're going to know, whether you actually have any acting ability or not. Now, if you murdered your wife and you got to ID the body, this could be one area where you could really get tripped up.
Okay, so I see where you're going, Joe.
Yeah.
I've never in the reading, and granted the reading about Mary Henderson Morris is a little less robust than Mary McGinnis Morris,
mm-hmm.
but most stuff in there does not indicate that there was any troubles in the marriage or any reasons for him to have done that.
But let's not forget that. Yeah, no, there wasn't, but let's not forget.
People do things.
Well, let's not forget that immediately, the whole hit thing gone wrong theory immediately popped up in everybody. That's the internet's brain.
On the second murder,
yeah,
yes.
The internet's brain, the police's brains, everybody. And so that really took the heat off of Jay, big time. And so there might have been some stuff going on. Who the hell knows?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't know what's going on. I mean, I've known people who seem very, very happily married, and, well, they're divorced now.
Yeah.
I mean, that stuff happens. And so, again, I'm not accusing Jay of anything, but this is a much-neglected theory.
Yeah, well,
that does explain a few things, because, again, the whole hitman theory, when you think about it, really doesn't make any sense.
So the other thing about the hitman theory that doesn't work is that there does appear to be an angle of theft in Mary Henderson Morris's death, because 6 months after her death, Jay started getting a bill from her calling card, because this is back in the days when you had a calling card to make long-distance calls, to the tune of $2,000. The cops track it down. Some teenage girl has that card. She says, I found this purse in this parking lot in Galveston. She apparently then gave the purse to a friend. The police go to that friend who has the purse. It does not obviously have any of Mary's stuff in it. You know, this person has just chucked all that stuff. Mm. But they then, here's the weird part, is they then turn around and they go to Mary Henderson Morris's family and they say, hey, is this her purse? And they all say, no, she didn't own that purse. Either A, it and nothing has ever been put out there that if anybody ever asked Mary McGinnis Morris's family if it was her purse, or B, it could be some weirdo robbery killer guy who he took her stuff, you know, her wallet or her cards or whatever, and tossed it into the next purse or the prior purse that he had stolen, and then eventually just did a big dump and dumped it in a parking lot and left. Because Galveston is less than, it's like 10, 20 miles away. It's super close.
No, it's not.
Actually, I don't even think it's that far away.
Yeah, it's not inconceivable that somebody could have rooted around her purse, taken out any items of possible value to him, and he didn't see any particular value in something like, say, a calling card.
Mm-hmm.
So he just left it. Somebody else came along and actually took that. You know,
but it's the differences in purses. That's the thing. Well, where I mean,
It didn't have to stay in the same purse. It can migrate from one purse to another.
What I'm saying, yeah. Though. So it's a weird thing where suddenly 6 months later it pops up. Jay also started getting weirdo phone calls asking for his wife a couple months after she died, though the cops traced those to an apartment complex, and as soon as he stopped saying she's not here and started saying, oh yeah, you can find her at, and gave the sheriff's department's phone number, the guy stopped calling. So, I mean, like, somebody tortured him. To a degree, I feel like Jay got jerked around.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether that's directly connected to his wife's death or not, because there are sickos out there who just think that it's fun to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There sure are. Could have been somebody like me who just concluded that he was a real murderer and decided to harass him a little bit. Yeah, it could be.
To try and shake it out of him.
Yeah, yeah.
Need to stop doing that.
Yeah, and again, just for the sake of whatever, you know, that's just a theory. I'm not accusing
Jay. Yeah, no, I don't think Jay's in any way.
There's all kinds of random possibilities in this one.
That's all of the theories that we have for this episode, or for this story, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we should give everybody the fun, interesting, they've been waiting this entire time for details, which is the stuff about us. Because I know you want to know about us. So to talk to us.
Actually, we probably want to know more about me, Joe.
So to talk to Joe, you can send an email to joe@thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com.
You have to stop talking like that.
I know.
Yeah.
So that's our email address where you can send questions, comments, concerns, just about anything we will respond to. We have all of our stuff available on our website, so that is the episodes, as well as some of our research for this and all episodes. That website is thinkingsidewayspodcast.com. You can find us on iTunes, where you can subscribe and rate. You can find us on most of the streaming sources, whether that be Stitcher or Google or wherever. And if those sites allow you to rate and review, please do. We're on social media, so we are on Twitter, where we're Thinking Sideways. We are also on Reddit. We have a thread or a forum.
Subreddit.
Thank you. Why can I never remember what Reddit does? It is
that.
Yeah.
It turns out I grew a beard and I realized how much white there was in it. And my wife said, "Oh, you look like Santa Claus." And I said, "Oh, damn.
You're not quite the Santa territory yet."
I know. So. I was really disturbed by it when I was like, "Wait, you're saying I'm getting that fat? Crap."
You're not quite there.
We are also on social media. We are on Facebook. So we have the Facebook page and the Facebook group. So like the page, join the group. Lots of good conversations going on in there. We have on the website links to merchandise. So we have shirts, we have mugs, we have stickers. All that stuff is available. You can find it on the right-hand panel through both Zazzle and or Redbubble, depending on what you're buying. It's all there. And that's really all the fun details, unless you want to talk to Joe, at which point you will send an email directly to joe@thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com for Joe. Please put in the subject line, for Joe. Yeah.
And expect to not get a response for 2 weeks.
From Joe.
True. You'll get one sooner than that. You're a chick anyway. All right.
Well, everybody, we are going to go ahead and wrap this one up and call it a night. And we will talk to you next week.
See you next week. Next time, I'm going to get it right the first time.
Oh, my God. Bye.
It's like he had a pair of them. You don't know what he's doing.
I know. It's bad.
Practice makes perfect.